This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Yes, perhaps you noticed, dear listener, but apparently the mega empire did strike back recently. Now, as a consequence of this, both Mr. Malin and I were hanging out at the Rebel base on Alderaan. Actually, we don't know our Star Wars trivia very well, so we're not sure we got the right planets here, but we do know that here on planet Earth, well, there's been a few issues of late. We confess that we were hoping, avidly hoping, that Donald Trump would not be returned to the White House. But alas, he is well on his way. This explains at any rate why we have not had the heart to put together a Radio Parallax for the last several weeks. And if you've been checking us out on terrestrial radio via KDVS, we appreciate the fact that Guy has been able to provide you with some fine entertainment courtesy of the Planetary Society and their Planetary Radio program. And we have said it before, we expect to bring some people from that show onto this show in the weeks and months to come and just talk about their good work. But here we are, trying to take a look at, well, first of all, what happened, what's going on, what the future may bring us, and try to have intelligent discussions about all of those things. Now, of course, pundits everywhere are sounding off on what they think happened on election day to, boy, and it pains me to say this, re-elect Donald J. Trump. Ms. Maryland, first of all, would like to sound off and note that this is not some sort of mandate, as a lot of the pundits are trying to claim. Across the nation, the official total is something like 1.6% advantage to Trump. And we must confess, right off the bat, we have our doubts about the election. We have our doubts whether it was legit. We're proud to note that we are no strangers to the topic of election theft here at Radio Parallax. We've been talking about stealing elections since we began, 24 years ago. The 2000 election, Bush versus Gore, was rather famously stolen, although the word stolen isn't necessarily what is thrown about in the pages of, say, the New York Times and Washington Post, but it does apply. The person who figured out how that election was spirited away from the rightful winner, Al Gore, was Greg Palast, who we've been privileged to have on this program many times. And Greg was also on the case in 2004 when Bush-Cheney chicanery managed to swing the state of Ohio away from Kerry and into the Bush column and thereby return Bush to office. We talked to statisticians that explained that the story just did not add up. Again, not something you read about in the New York Times, but if you followed the writings and shenanigans of Greg Palast, you know that Greg was on it in both cases, and he's still on it. And Mr. Milne, this might be a very good time to quote what he has said of late about the November election.
That brings us to the heart of the matter. Greg, as you see it and you look at this election, tell me what you feel the results actually were when if this massive organized disenfranchisement hadn't happened.
You can see my film Vigilantes Inc. Look at the numbers. Meet the people who are challenged. And by the way, I'm the only journalist that actually got the challengers on camera.
Yeah, there's some remarkable moments in the film when Greg actually confronts them.
I confronted the challengers. You meet the challenged at Vigilantes Inc. And again, just go to gregpalast.com or save your vote, not my vote or Mark's vote, saveyourvote.org. It's still a live issue. So now the question, did it change the election? Nevada, Arizona, absolutely no question. Now I'm looking at the other numbers. Now I used to be a professor of statistics and I'm a journalist. I don't like to reach conclusions until I have all the facts, ma'am, just the facts. So I know Nevada and Arizona were flipped through racial vote suppression tactics, Jim Crow stuff. and maybe Georgia. I'm looking at those numbers now. I'm looking at Michigan. I'm looking at Wisconsin. I'm looking at those swing states, but I don't want to make a final conclusion. But I can tell you that absolutely Arizona and Nevada went for Harris, except for the voters removed by vigilante vote challengers and other horrific Jim Crow trickery that is not getting reported. I'm giving you the numbers. I'm giving you the names. We'll give you one other thing. Massive purges of the voter rolls, overwhelmingly voters of color. And when I looked at this in Georgia and Wisconsin, I brought in the experts that work with Amazon on addresses. What happens in Georgia, for example, Brian Kemp knocked off half a million voters off the voter rolls. We sent that to the Amazon experts, and they ran it through their address checkers because Kemp said these people don't live in Georgia. They don't live at their voting address. And they said 340,134. We're being very exact. We have their names and addresses. Every single one were wrongly removed.
Well, to make a long story short, Greg Palast has his doubts about multiple states among those swing states. As we all know, we're looking at the seven states upon which the election would hinge, and officially Donald Trump swept them all. Mr. Palast has his doubts about whether that was done honestly, and we hope in the weeks and months to come we'll bring Greg back on the show to talk about what he has found. Of course, whatever he finds, I'm quite certain that the mainstream media will not be up on it or endorse it, or that much of anything is going to be done about it. But we're going to seek answers just the same. One thing that does seem pretty certain about the election was that the MAGA crowd was mobilized. They turned out in the numbers that, well, they needed to turn out. Unfortunately, on the flip side, the Democrats did not turn out the numbers that were needed. If you were watching on election night, as we actually reported live, we're watching on election night, the reports kept coming in that Harris was running behind Biden 4 years ago and various criteria that looked pretty ominous. Now, of course, the Democrats are busy pointing fingers at one another and explaining why it was that they failed here, there, or elsewhere. Not the Harris team, which seems to be silent about a lot of this. But a lot of questions are being raised that may or may not be answered in the months and years to come about what exactly happened. It certainly surprised a lot of people that Trump did as well as he did among the Latin and Black populations, where he ran substantially ahead of where he had previously. Is some of that due to misogyny, people not wanting to vote for a woman? Well, my guess is to a degree, yes. Although a good friend of mine did point out a couple of days ago that you couldn't really blame the well-known Latin bias for being a little bit macho. You couldn't blame that population for being misogynistic in view of the fact that down in Mexico, they just elected a woman as the first president of Mexico. Of course, the comeback to that is, well, the choice was between woman A or woman B, which I think does put it in a slightly different perspective. At any rate, it is a little bit surprising to me that 47% of Latino men, far more than Trump got back in 2020, went his way this time. Now, a stat being thrown around that I'm not sure about is that 53% of white women voted for Trump. It was certainly anticipated that Trump would get a thumping when it came to women voting, given the abortion issue. But surprisingly, abortion didn't seem to play that big a role. Something like 14% of people that were polled said they thought that was important. Many more people were focused on the economy and how it is that Donald Trump was judged a crack businessman who would do well with the economy is something that, it's just hard to figure. Actually, we do have an explanation for that we'll come to in a minute. Anyway, it does seem clear that a lot more women thought the economy was important than that thought the loss of abortion rights was important. In the Washington Post, Sally Jenkins said sexism was by no means the whole story of this election. But as Harris tried and failed to break the ultimate glass ceiling, Trump and his allies sneeringly called her dumb, trash, and a hoe. Nice. To which Jenkins added, in America, misogyny is alive and rampant. Now, David Brooks is a very clever writer. He's a conservative and yet sometimes funny. Not sure we agree with him that often, but he did note in a piece in the New York Times, to which we have to give him a point or two, that in our post-industrial economy, we've elevated college-educated knowledge workers to a higher level and rendering everyone else invisible. Brooks noted that as vocational training withered and free trade policy sent industrial jobs overseas, working-class voters, especially men, felt angry and betrayed. Democrats fancy themselves warriors against inequality, but they've become so focused on racial inequality, gender inequality, and LGBTQ inequality that they couldn't see the great chasm of economic inequality staring them in the face. Now, we had many a laugh here on this show, pre-election, about the ridiculousness of some of the charges that Trump was making. You know, we referred to how he was being sane-washed by the media, given the insanity of some of the things that he was saying, like that you could send your kid off to school and he would come back with a sex change operation. Absurd. But writing in the Wall Street Journal, another publication we don't generally agree with, Rachel Bachman noted that Trump scored big by leveraging one of the hot-button cultural issues of our time, which is, quote, transgender rights, unquote. He and his backers, and I understand Elon Musk spent a lot of money on this, doled out at least $123 million on TV ads specifically targeting Harris and the Democratic support for letting transgender women compete in women's sports. The ads, with the tagline, Kamala's for they, them, President Trump is for you, not only resonated with blue-collar laborers, but also with high-income parents worrying about their daughters playing against transgender girls in school and college sports. And it should be noted that apparently this did not score well with the Latin population, and I think in some cases with the Black population, which is sometimes surprisingly conservative about these issues. And of course, themselves feel like, well, we're an oppressed minority. Why we need some help. Why divert a lot of political capital to a section of the population that's like a tenth of 1%? Anyway, I understand a lot of Harris's handlers wanted her to address this issue and put some space between her and the progressives in the Democratic Party to make a more of a mainstream appeal, more centrist appeal, and she declined to do so. That, I think it could be argued, was an error. And we are not suggesting that we should be abandoning our efforts to promote the welfare and care for various suppressed minorities in this country.
Like sound engineers?
Well, yeah, among others. But really, people, we just have to stop and pause and say, look, if you've got a penis and a scrotum and a girlfriend and you enjoy having sex with her, you probably shouldn't be on the women's swim team. When you take the position that, no, we're supporting transgender rights to advocate that a person with those qualities should be on the women's team, well, you're going to lose a lot of people who just look at it from a common sense standpoint and say, you've got to be kidding. And that's all we're going to say about that today. Now, something else we need to discuss in this program is the massive failure of the American judicial system. Our courts, and I dare say our law enforcement agencies, let us down in dealing with Donald J. Trump. We expect to have Stephen J. Harper back on this program to discuss this in the weeks to come. At the end of the Trump administration, Mr. Harper pointed out that Trump faced four major legal challenges in his future. He was going to be prosecuted for making off with official records and storing them in his bathroom and refusing to give them back and concocting all sorts of lies about the entire affair. And frankly, that would have been a good one, but a Trump-appointed judge, Eileen Cannon, ruled on a cockamamie piece of logic that the prosecutor in this case was not legitimate. Harper pointed out to us that this was a ridiculous ruling that was sure to be overturned in the appeal of the matter, but unfortunately, the clock has run out. So that serious charge looks dead and buried. And of course, that being a federal matter, Trump could have had the case dismissed if he won the election. In a similar manner, we have the other federal case wherein Trump was going to be tried for the fact that he incited a riot in the nation's capital in an effort to stop the certification of Joe Biden as president and continue his rule from the Oval Office rather illegally. Now, this one, we are sad to note, got stymied by the U.S. Supreme Court stepping in to rule on whether the president was immune from prosecution. And everyone's surprised. They said, well, you know, his official acts mean that he is immune if it's an official act. And so they had to go back in that federal case to point out that, well, a lot of what he was doing were not official acts. I think we noted on the show, and if we didn't, we'll need to note it now, that the evidence had surfaced that Trump had used burner phones to make a lot of these calls to people to organize the riot. But alas, that case ground to a halt and was stymied and slowed down. And as of a week ago, the charges were officially dropped. In speaking to Stephen Harper about this, he thought this was actually the right move. And we'll have to have him come on the show to explain why he thought that, because we are keenly disappointed at that outcome. It's Mr. McMillan's understanding that because the charges were dismissed without prejudice, they may be revived again 4 years from now. Yes, and on my personal timetable on that one, I think that could happen just shortly after hell freezes over. And of course, there's the two state cases. And down in Georgia, by doing all sorts of horrible legal maneuvers, they were able to slow down the prosecution of Donald Trump for trying to get the state election officials to magically come up with 11,000 non-existent votes to make him the winner in Georgia. And that, too, is died on the vine. Although one certainly hopes that, you know, maybe someday it'll be revived. And finally, we have the matter of the case that actually did finally go to trial. The one where Trump was prosecuted by the state of New York for all sorts of financial irregularities, including the illegal payoff to Stormy Daniels as a campaign contribution. As you no doubt recall, Trump was found guilty of 34 felonies in that case. But instead of sentencing him last June, it was put off till the fall, and I think put off again, and then I guess dismissed. He's not going to be charged. He's not, I mean, I don't know exactly where it stands legally, but we do know that Trump is not going to do jail time as president of the United States. And I'm also pretty sure that whatever financial fines they put upon him will get paid off by his supporters. Or, you know, I don't know, maybe selling gold sneakers or trading cards where he looks like an astronaut wielding a shotgun.
Don't forget the guitars.
And I guess he's got guitars for sale also?
Electric guitars. Gibson isn't very happy about it because he pilfered their design.
Oh, well, this is one I hadn't heard about. Oh, I'm sure the Donald will find a way. I spent too much time on today is the fact that Donald Trump, global warming denier, is now headed back for the White House, and we can be pretty sure of the fact that all of the green initiatives and things that have been started to try and move us away from our dependency on fossil fuels is going to go in the wastebasket. And to that, all I can say is it's a doggone shame back in the year 2000 that Al Gore, the leading advocate of doing something about global warming, was denied the presidency. Oil company favorites Bush and Cheney took over and have slowed the effort to do anything about this pretty effectively. Oh, and by the way, it does appear that when the results are in, they expect that 2024 will be the year when the U.S. has achieved that horrific goal of 1.5 degrees Celsius increase in temperatures over pre-industrial Earth. And doggone it, that's all we're going to say about that today. And then there's the question of dealing with COVID. We helped establish a website, which we can advise you to check out at your leisure, TrumpPandemic.net, which told the story of how Donald Trump dropped the ball spectacularly in dealing with COVID for his own political purposes. And as a result of that, America, as compared to the UK and Canada, lost 40% more people in terms of morbidity and mortality, which translates to something like 450,000 excess American deaths. Now, we all know that the economy suffered during COVID. And the question in my mind is, how much extra suffering took place because people were dropping like flies everywhere? A lot of people that died ran up rather huge expenses in hospitals before they checked out. And that couldn't have had a good effect on the U.S. economy. And as a result, when a lot of money was spent afterwards to try and jumpstart matters, well, that contributed to inflation. And inflation, of course, is one of the main reasons people were unhappy with Joe Biden, which, frankly, wasn't Joe Biden's fault. Now, why it is the Democrats failed to capitalize on Trump's mismanagement of COVID is one of the great mysteries of election 2024. Now, admittedly, all that social isolation and masks and such things were unpopular with the public, and maybe taking the position that these things were necessary and required when you have a pandemic, well, maybe they just figured that wasn't going to resonate with the public. I don't know, but I would say that that was mishandled. Donald Trump was the wrong guy to have in the Oval Office during a pandemic. And by the way, if the H5N1 influenza virus starts to be transmitted person to person, and we have another epidemic on par with the 1918 Spanish flu, well, once again, Donald Trump is not the guy you want in the Oval Office, and I can certainly add to that, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is certainly not the guy you want to have in charge of the Department of Health and Human Services. So let's just hope that that doesn't happen in the next 4 years. People in medicine know that epidemics like that are not a matter of if, they're a matter of when. So I guess all we can do is to hope for the moment that it will not be in the next 4 years. This is Radio Parallax. Stick around. We got lots more to talk about.